Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Today is July 21st, 2018. And Dylan, happy birthday, man. You're 21 today.
What? Dylan's birthday's today?
Hey, 21 years old. And guess where he's at?
Probably not drinking. He's probably
New Orleans.
Ah, that's a good place to ring in 21.
He doesn't get knocked over the head and get kidnapped and do some type of foreign war work or something.
Right.
But anyway, have a good time if you're hearing me here. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a good time on the radio here. And if you haven't seen some of the back videos of what happens before we go on air, it's almost to the last second. I just put my rear end on the seat, pull the mic over, and we start talking. But today's the 21st, 2018. I also start my day here with a morning cup of fresh Joe from CEFCO Hilltop here in Cameron. So go check it out. They got a really good special. Two Powerades, 32 ounces for only $2.50. And that's pretty good. So stock up on those. It's hot out there. Make sure you get your electrolytes. Stay hydrated. The whole works. Also, we're simulcasting. We're right here now on 105.1 FM, The Ranch. And we're also out of Rockdale at KRXT 98.5. So all you Rockdalonians out there, give me a call at 254-697-6633, or anybody for that matter. An email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com, or just go directly to the website aaronsgunshop.com and check out all that's going on. Don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel, follow me on Instagram, and like us on Facebook. All those things help with keeping us on the air. Now, I didn't write down my show highlights. I'm going to do it on the fly here. But as always, we're going to do true stories of self-defense. I'm taking this out of the Concealed Carry magazine. I think there's about five or six of them. And Trey, we're going to do it again like we did last week. We're just going to read it and see what our first impressions are of the story. So we'll have some interactions here. After that, I'm going to do my opinion piece. I've always got an opinion. This one's pretty interesting because I'm trying to coordinate this particular show with a few different segments, cloverleafing almost on the same topic. So the opinion piece is going to link up with some other things I'm doing in the show. Then we have the incredible, awesome attorney extraordinaire, Benton Ross Watson. He's going to be coming in, and we're going to be talking about, I wanted to talk about manslaughter. You always hear about this, and the concept idea was you're in a self-defense situation. You feel that you're in the right. Come to find out, you go to court of law. You don't get convicted of murder, per se, but for some reason, due to some mistakes or mishandling or misjudgment, you're charged with manslaughter. And there's different degrees of it, so we're going to talk to him about that. Also got another article here on access to a firearm to a child, unauthorized access. I thought I'd read it as a follow-up to a previous segment we did. And then after that, when we're done with Ross, we're going to have the incredible, delicious Janae Goodman. And Trey, what's she going to be talking about this week again?
Well, dehydrated foods. It's a subject she's talked about before. I have to, is it all right if I own up that it's a recording this week?
No, go right ahead.
And Janae is on vacation visiting her good friend in Pennsylvania. So she didn't have a chance. They're on the beach, and she actually visited a casino for the first time.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's a fun time. Just as long as she doesn't lose all her money, that's good.
Right. But, of course, you know, she knows what everything about food and preparation, that sort of thing.
Well, it's unfortunate because delicious Janae Goodman always leaves a very nice fragrance on the radio after she gives her segment. So how'd you like that segue?
Wow.
Wow. All right. What else do we got here? We've got at 11, the voice of law enforcement, retired police chief Randy Dixon, the Duke of Decency, the pontificator of practicality, and the connoisseur of common sense. He's going to probably call in, and I think he hurt his foot too, right? His foot's still messed up, isn't it?
He did, and as far as I know, it is. I don't think it's this weekend. I think it's next weekend when he has his eye surgery.
Okay.
So
we're fixing him up, and he's going to be ready for
action.
He
may be here this week.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. Just stand by. It's either going to be on the phone, or he'll be here in studio live. After that, we've got the product spotlight sponsored by ANC Firearms out in Heidenhammer. And this is a neat little gun here. If you go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, you'll see a video of me holding it up there. It's the old single six, but the one that ANC has, he's got both cylinders. He's got the 22 long rifle and the 22 Magnum with the wooden grips. I've got my personal one here I'll be talking about. It's kind of the same. Mine's a total blued with only the 22 cylinder, and it's got the black grip. So we're talking about it. I have it in my hand as I'm talking about this article, and then I'll give you some details on it. Really nice gun. So check out the picture. Give him a call. Tell him you want it. Now, the interview segment, I don't really have anybody for the interview segment. I wanted to talk about ego states as compared to an alter ego. There's a big difference.
Now, by ego states, you're not talking about how Texans are proud of Texas and New Yorkers are proud of New York.
That's just an ego. I'm talking parent, adult, child ego states, how they can apply, how you can, if you know how they work and recognize them, how you can possibly get out of a situation and not do a nonviolent dispute resolution by understanding the personalities and egos that people have in them and how they can change so readily. So we'll be talking about that. But the alter ego is what really made me bring this up, because an alter ego we should all have, and I'll explain that as we go a little bit further in the show. So now with that, I'm going to go right to the true stories. And this is out of the current issue, or actually last month's issue of the Concealed Carry magazine. And the first story goes as follows. Georgia homeowner defeats three home invaders in a gun battle. A Lawrenceville man heard sounds of a break-in to his home about 3 a.m. Taking up a pistol for defense, he investigated and found three strangers inside his house. The homeowner and bandits exchanged fire. The homeowner was wounded in the leg during the battle, but he succeeded in driving off the invaders, one of whom died from a gunshot wound sustained in the fight. All right, Trey, right off the top, you know what I'm going to say. What is it?
He was... He had his gun.
He went and got his gun first. He didn't hesitate to get his gun.
You know, I've always wondered about, especially situations where it was an actual gun battle and not just the homeowner defending themselves against unarmed or knife-armed or club-armed assailants. If there's no, you know, there's if it's a gun battle, it's more than one shot fired.
Right.
So there's collateral damage. There's holes in walls. There's broken furniture, broken glass, whatever. Who ends up paying for that?
Well, I'm sure. I don't know to be technical about it, but I'm sure you could claim it that the criminal did things, and then your insurance covers it. But I really don't know on that.
That's something that's occurred to me every once in a while when we've.
I think the pleasure would be just the satisfaction knowing you took that sucker down.
Well, yeah, yeah. But then when you're done and the adrenaline's off and you're like, okay, I took care of business.
Crap. The only thing about this story I don't like is he gets shot in the leg. I'm trying to get this picture in my head. He comes in, and maybe they saw each other simultaneously, and then the bullets just started flying. But if you got the jump on somebody, you shouldn't be taking gunfire. But anyway.
Well, there's three of them, and let's assume that all three were armed. If all he managed was to get shot in the leg.
Well, that's what I mean. If you caught him by surprise, a good shooter can take him down. If you're not caught by surprise, then yeah, the odds are a little bit against you. All right, let's go to story number two. Armed West Virginia grandmother foils home invasion. A Putnam County grandmother heard someone trying to pry open her bedroom window on Christmas Eve. Taking up a pistol she kept for defense, she raised the weapon and ordered the burglar to leave, which he promptly did on seeing the armed and determined woman.
First thing pops into my head, stop or my mom will shoot.
Well, once again, we can go back to story number one. She immediately picked up her firearm. And I'll tell you what, man, I see a woman with a firearm pointed at me. I have no idea what's going to happen. I'm leaving.
Okay? I see anybody with a firearm pointed at me. I'll go over here.
I don't know, man. It's a little different. I say what you want. I look at a guy with a gun, I can figure it out. I see a woman with a gun, and she scares me. I don't know what she's thinking. All right, next story. Ohio pharmacist stops trio of armed robbers. An Akron pharmacist who's opening his business about 9 a.m. one day when three masked men dressed in all black stormed into the store, with two of them jumping over the counter to accost him. The store owner was armed, drew his pistol, and fired on the robbers, wounding one and putting all three to flight. Well, top of my head goes, he was prepared more than shooting a piece of paper at a range. He was somehow more experienced than making sure the bullets go into the same hole on a target. He's done some extra training. When you get accosted by somebody fast like that, you have to have that training built into you already. So
that's muscle memory.
Muscle memory.
You know, one thing I've noticed on a lot of the stories, several of the stories you've read over the last several months, they've included pharmacies getting robbed. And I know someone, you know, very close to me who in her youth worked at a pharmacy and was robbed by men with assault rifles.
Well, it's one of two things. They're either on the drugs or there's a lot of money going through there and they know it.
Man, it's almost like it's hazard pay you should be getting if you work in a pharmacy nowadays.
I saw a video of somebody robbing it, and the guy just, I don't know who it was, but he had the lab coat on, comes out with his .38 revolver, I think it was, and starts shooting this guy, takes him down. So, all right, story number four. The number here, 254-697-6633. Story number four. Louisiana woman defends against early morning intruder in bedroom. A 76-year-old New Orleans woman awoke to noise in her home. On investigating, she found a stranger in her bedroom with some type of object in his hand. Taking up a pistol she kept nearby for emergencies, she shot the intruder once, ending the incident and calling police. Okay, my bad with that. You want to answer that?
Gary Lee West.
Okay, pick it up. We'll see what he says. My only problem with that story was she went and got her gun afterwards. Welcome to the show. This is Matt. Who are you?
What time is your one ads on Saturdays?
You know, I really don't know, ma'am, because I'm doing this show and I don't pay attention. So thanks for the call, though.
Okay.
So anyway, where was I, Trey? She should have got her gun first, but she ended up handling the situation. All right, story number 5. Texas resident foils armed robbery by juveniles. A Dallas man was approaching his home when he was accosted by 2 juveniles who tried to rob him. The homeowner drew a gun and shot both the juvenile assailants, putting them to flight. The young predators will face charges in aggravated robbery. Well, once again, the man was prepared. He drew his gun, took care of what he had to do, saved the day. So, ladies and gentlemen, train. Use these stories to learn what to do and what not to do in situations that come up like these, okay? Now, we're running a little bit late, but it's all right. I got an opinion piece. I'm not going to let you down. And my opinion piece today is titled "The Importance of Knowing and Understanding Body Language." Ladies and gentlemen, in my training seminars and license to carry class, I push the learning and understanding of body language. Body language is a visual indicator of a person's feelings, attitude, and intentions. Body language is my first visual line of defense. Many times, no words have to be said to realize the true intentions of someone interacting with you or just passing you by on the street. Everyone gives off a signal, a pulse, a vibe with their body language. If we learn body language, it's just one more tool for us to use in our self-awareness and self-defense. Body language gives us a head start as to whether we should run, hide, or fight. Fight should a situation get to that point. If the general mannerisms of the person are the words being spoken, then observation of body specifically can be the punctuation marks. What I mean by that is, we learn the basic attitude and intent of a person by watching their body language. But if we look close, we may be able to tell if there are hidden weapons. Examples of that would be a bulge or protrusion from the waistband where a gun may be holstered, the metal clip outside the pocket showing where a knife or gun may be clipped to, the positioning of the body away from you to hide potential weapons, or the adjustment of clothing due to the weight of a weapon. These are just a few examples. When we put the verbiage of body language together with the punctuation of body language, we end up getting a short story written about the individual we are reading. In peaceful and unthreatened times, this game of observation can be lots of fun and help to develop your skills when it comes to reading someone like a book. Getting a good gun, buying the correct type of ammunition, and going to the range to practice are all basic fundamentals to become proficient in protecting yourself. Now, add the art of reading body language and you will triple your area of security by getting ahead of the threat. Reading body language, in my opinion and experience, is just as important as knowing how to shoot your gun well. So expand your education and become a master at reading body language. And with that, Trey, let's take a break. And when we come back on the other side, we're going to have the extraordinary attorney, Benton Ross Watson. This segment of Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program is being brought to you by Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, LLC. Have you been arrested? Are you in jail and want to get out? Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds at 254-697-6035. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds accepts credit cards and debit cards. Call-ins are also accepted. Conduct your business privately in the Twin Pistol Bail Bonds offices, which are located directly across from the Milam County Sheriff's Office at 707 West 4th Street in Cameron. You're in jail and you want to get out. Let Twin Pistol Bail Bonds help. Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds now at 254-697-6035 and ask for Dustin Thomas or Lisa Roden. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, 254-697-6035.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Bald Engine, formerly Cameron Seed Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop it at 408 West Bank. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog Bolts. Power through the summer with Cameron's Bald Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bank.
Vicki Goza of Mark Burns Lowell Funeral Home talks about the celebration of life.
Let's remember that loved one, their life, about the way they lived and what they embraced. Funerals are really about life. Our attitude is we need to remember this person by celebrating the life that they lived.
Call Mark Burns Lowell Funeral Home anytime. Serving Central Texas families since 1908. 254-697-3661.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunShop.com.
Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MISO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen.
Snap into a Slim Jim.
July 21st, 2018, and to my left, we have the extraordinaire attorney, Benton Ross Watson. Ross,
back in the saddle.
Welcome back. It's always a pleasure to have you here. This segment is sponsored by Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, and we can't thank Rick enough for supporting the show. And we always have him or extraordinary attorney, Benton Ross Watson, with us. So, Ross, what do we got going on today?
Well, I think we're talking about you keep throwing basically civil law rules at me when you got the expert Rick Dodd, you know, controlling the show here on the legal aspects. I don't know why.
If he wasn't busy fishing, hunting, doing whatever else he's enjoying a day,
maybe I'll be there one day. So I mean, there's some criminal things we're going to talk about today, but I think. There's some civil aspects that would play in. I think we got some things you say, you know, self-defense, manslaughter, criminally negligent homicide. These things don't apply to me. I'm going to turn off the channel. Well, I think you should stay tuned because I got some examples about everyday life that system is just extremely scary about what it can do to you just in a everyday accident.
Okay, I want to make a comment, though. This is normally an LTC attorney segment. I'm always thinking first LTC and how the law applies. And so you're in a self-defense mode, and you think you were justified, and all of a sudden you're charged with manslaughter. And then as I talked to you, it opened up into how so many different things can happen, and I think people are going to be very interested to hear
what happens. Okay. The law is just one huge hodgepodge of gray, intertwined areas. So okay,
that's how I came into it, but that's what I like about Ross and Rick. I can come up with one comment, and it opens up into a delta of different types of information.
That's not us. That's just the system. But, so I'll start out with the LTC part of it. You know, when we're talking about manslaughter or criminally negligent homicide, this is a person commits an offense if he recklessly causes the death of an individual. So that's manslaughter. If you're reckless and you cause the death, that recklessness caused the death of an individual, that's manslaughter. If a person commits an offense if he causes the death of an individual by criminal negligence, that's criminally negligent homicide. Okay, and so how these play, and I don't really know where I should start, but I'm going to start with, instead of going into those definitions first, I'm just going to go with the LTC part because I can knock these out. Okay, we get manslaughter. We get to ask for either a manslaughter lesser included of murder or something to that effect. If we were in a situation where we fired and killed somebody, we'd get to ask for that, or we'd be charged with manslaughter if, let's say, they often happen like an imperfect self-defense. We talk about when you're defending yourself, how you got to be in a place where you've got a right to be. Mm-hmm. You cannot have provoked that person. And so you often see a manslaughter charge or an imperfect self-defense claim, right, to ask for manslaughter instead of murder when you have a situation to say, I actually went to that person, and I think you're going to talk about ego states later on today, and I didn't use my ego state's consciousness very well, and I got upset with this person and really came at them in an aggressive manner, and they end up coming back at me, but they escalate the situation. They escalate it. And now I've got to escalate it just to survive.
So one of those three things that if you're in a place you're supposed to be, if you're not doing criminal activity, so on and so forth, if you break one of those, you might have been right to defend yourself, but now you just got a manslaughter charge.
Manslaughter charge, okay? And so when you're in this case, you actually could be convicted, and at the punishment phase, the jury's going to have the option to find an imperfect self-defense and say, well, he deserved killing. You know, it's one of those. Well,
time to kill.
That's just defense attorney humor. But that what they'd really be wanting you to find is what I'd say is, okay, my guy's mental state wasn't there. He didn't really intend to do this. This was not he. This guy really overreacted to the provocation. This blew up because that guy didn't use his ego state consciousness either, right? And he really took it too far. This probably just would have been an argument without physical altercation, right? But that other person blew up. So I'm going to ask you you can actually ask for an acquittal. Okay, that doesn't happen very often.
Clarify that term, please.
An acquittal means not guilty.
Okay.
Okay, now you're guilty, you already found guilty, right? And so, but they can actually just not impose any punishment. They can actually move for an acquittal, but that's a complicated process. But this can happen on an imperfect self-defense. It's just rare. Most of the time, you're going to be wanting a manslaughter versus a murder charge. Okay. The other is, I wanted to point this out. This was a 1987 Court of Appeals case, and it said this blatantly. We're going to get into the definitions, but if you're asking me, you asked me last week or the week before, what is recklessness? It's hard to explain, right? But this is what this court said, and this is word for word. A defendant who is familiar with guns, who knows a gun is loaded, and who points it at another person, is consciously disregarding, and that's the key phrase, consciously disregarding a risk that his conduct, that is pointing a loaded weapon at another, may cause harm or death, and is at least reckless.
Yes, that's why we can't emphasize enough. Finger off the trigger, muzzle pointed in a safe direction.
And that's why we emphasize training in this. That's why we emphasize going through the steps, having a routine ready to go, so that you're confident, comfortable, and not nervous. And when you do point it, it's when it's in a justified situation. Okay, and so just know that if you're not justified, you've got courts that are going to say you are at least reckless for even picking that thing up and pointing it at another person. Okay, and then you're going to have self-defense raised in a manslaughter murder charge. In those kind of situations, you are going to be entitled to raise also your mental state. If you've had a family violence issue, you're going to be able to raise that and say, I deserve a manslaughter versus a murder, or I deserve lesser than a manslaughter or something to that effect, because this was my mental state. I didn't have the same mental state as everybody else. Okay, and so we talk about the mental states. What do we mean by this? And so you have a mental aspect and a physical aspect. You have an intent, a mens rea, what we call it, okay, in the legal field, and an actus reus. You have conduct, and you have a mental mind. Somebody either intends, knows, is conscious of something but disregards it, which would be recklessness, or they're so negligent that they have failed to perceive a risk that is so obvious and dangerous that any ordinary person, okay, in society would see this obvious and dangerous risk, okay, and so we held them criminally responsible for not perceiving it, okay? And so, obviously, a good way that I distinguish these four, I think to start off with, if you say intent, when we say somebody intends to do something, a good way of explaining this is that there was their goal.
Okay, yeah.
Let's say they set a house on fire wanting to kill a person.
I tell you what, man, what you're saying here sounds the most clear of law that I've heard in a while. I mean, there's other things that can get so convoluted, but this one, the way you're breaking it down, it sounds pretty easy to follow along here.
Yes, and I'm not following the definition. If we follow the definition of my words, you'd be like, huh? What?
Okay. That's why you're attorney extraordinaire.
And, I mean, come on. And so if we talk about knowledge, right, where intent is we have a goal to bring about this result or this harm or this conduct that we're doing, right? Knowledge would be maybe it's not our goal. Maybe I saw a good on the internet. I wish I could, I don't want to plagiarize or anything. I wish I could quote him as a really good example. Maybe I want to burn documents in a house because they incriminate me. I don't want to kill the guy in there, right? I just want to burn the documents. But I know, right, that it's reasonably certain that if I set this house on fire, he's going to die. He may not, and I don't want him to. I really just want to destroy the documents, but I know it's a reasonable certainty that he could die by setting the house on fire. So I have knowledge of what I'm doing. Okay, and so when we talk about recklessness is, it's a gross deviation. It's something that it is a substantial risk. There's a really dangerous chance of this happening, and it's maybe not for certain, but there's a strong likelihood that it can happen, and it's so strong, and not only is it a strong likelihood that it can happen, the consequences of that thing happening are grave. Like, there's a great chance of somebody being killed or injured, okay? And so we consciously are aware, we know that this risk that is dangerous exists, yet we disregard it and go through with our conduct anyway, okay? So I don't know for certain that this is going to happen, but I know that there's a strong possibility such that nobody else in society would take this risk, yeah. Okay? But I disregard it. That's recklessness. Okay? And so that would be manslaughter. That goes into the definition of manslaughter. So when we talk about criminal negligence, it's not the same when we hear Rick Dodd talking about, right, proximate cause and, foreseeability, what's reasonably foreseeable to the ordinary man. Yes, that has a play into this negligence part, but it's different because it's got to be such a grave risk, okay, that your failure to perceive this risk is so grave and so absurd, right, that we are going to hold you criminally responsible because anybody in that situation must, right, realize the dangerousness and obviousness of this danger. Whereas if you're having a civil case, right, it's, would a reasonable person be able to reasonably foresee this thing happening in the future? It's not, it wasn't such a grave risk. No, it could be a minor risk in the civil world. Minor risk. And I could just reasonably foresee or not foresee, and that's going to give me my result, right? You know, whether it happens or doesn't happen in the civil world as opposed to in the criminal world.
Ross, you gave a lot, and it's all clear to me. Can you, with all that we've talked about, give us a real quick, simple scenario of a self-defense act? Let's say it's in the home. You would think, oh, no way somebody could get manslaughter defending themselves in the home. Could you lay out some type of idea to the people out there?
Yeah, a couple gets into a fight. There's a gun under the bed. The man and woman rush to grab the gun on the bed. The man thinks that if I don't grab this gun, she's going to kill me, okay, or hurt somebody else. And so they're both rushing to the gun, and they wrestle over the gun, and the gun goes off and kills one. You'd think that that would be a self-defense claim, and some defense attorneys might launch a self-defense claim. But if you remember, Rick several months ago said if you launch a self-defense claim, you're saying that you defended yourself against an attack. So really, it was an intentional act. Really, there's been cases where when they're wrestling, the husband falls over a phone cord.
Well, let's change.
And the gun goes off. Yeah, and so that would be either reckless or negligent.
Let's change it a little bit more to you're okay in your home, but you're being aggressed upon by an outside force. The threat is coming into the home, and still you get a manslaughter charge. Could it be maybe because the threat was leaving and you decided to shoot him in the back when he's on the porch? Is that a manslaughter charge?
I don't ever foreclose any of those kinds of possibilities. I mean, any prosecutor can bring anything. And, yeah, I think that there could be scenario. But, like we said, these kinds of cases are so factual and so fact-intensive and circumstance-based, case-by-case basis, that it's hard to say exactly what fact may change the calculus.
Yeah.
But here's what's scary.
I mean, you could have it all the way perfect, and one little fact changes the whole spectrum of it, doesn't it?
What I wanted to tell people is that you think that these kinds of things don't apply to you, but in fact, you run a risk of getting charged with manslaughter or criminally negligent homicide every day you get in your car. And you say, no, I don't, I'm a safe driver. Look, accidents happen. And if an accident happens, it truly happens, if somebody dies, you are going to be at risk, right, of being prosecuted for criminal negligent homicide. That's why we've got to make sure that who we elect as our public officials, right, we elect the right ones that have common sense and realize that bad things happen, and just because somebody dies doesn't mean that somebody is criminally responsible. And I'll give you an example. In 2017, in July, I think it was the last year, there was nothing more than they were going down, two cars were going down a highway, the vehicle in front did not use their blinker. They were going under the speed limit. It was a 40-mile-an-hour speed limit. Right, the vehicle forgets they have to turn. They make a sudden stop, don't use their blinker. And the other car rear ends them. Is not speeding or anything. Right? The jury ends up, he ends up getting charged with negligent homicide, goes to a jury trial, the jury convicts. Right? Then it goes to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals affirms that conviction. Okay? Then it goes and gets reversed, thank goodness, by the Court of Criminal Appeals. But he had to spend all that money, hire all those lawyers, fight all that time, and go through all that stress and trouble, which was truly an accident. And the court says that this was an accident.
So why do you think that got to that point? What was so persuasive to get the jury to convict him?
Again, we don't know the backstory. There may be some other political maneuvers involved. You know, who knows? Okay, but it may have just been an overzealous prosecutor that is pressured by victims of the family because somebody died. Okay, and then you have those cases, let's say.
Yeah, you brought something up. That's very interesting. I mean, I know this, but you just said it, where you have a prosecutor, okay, gets elected. And let's say it's a small town area, and the prosecutor has good connections with people of a higher status, money, okay, and persuasiveness, so that when something happens and it happens to affect those people, there could be pressure put on that prosecutor to make certain decisions.
Exactly, and there could be just a political group, not necessarily money wise. You could have one group of people in the community that all was behind a leader, and this leader dies or something happens to him, and so this group of people really pushes for some kind of charge, or you know, it could be that maybe the prosecutor really feels for one certain victim. Who knows? It just, again, these are things that we don't see behind the scenes, but any number of reasons can cause these kinds of cases. But the fact remains, this was truly an accident. Okay, and now he was negligent. If Rick was to file a lawsuit, probably would get a wrongful death case, probably would get insurance money for that kind of case. There was some negligence there. He hit him in the back, should have been more aware, but was it a crime? Okay. There are probably some people out here, even listeners, that would disagree with me, but the majority of the people would not say that this is a criminal act. There was nothing else besides those facts, basically, that I'm telling you. Then you have, obviously, you need to
Let me give you an example of that. I'll give you a perfect example right here in Cameron. Going down 79 here, and somebody slows down to take a left-hand turn. They put their left-hand blinker on it. And you know how you go to the right to pass them up? Well, they all of a sudden decide they wanted to go to the right, and bam, I hit them. but actually they hit me. I'm the one who got the ticket. So it's like,
right? And
I'm not guilty. They're the one who did it screwy.
And what was crazy about that case is to the same thing. The person who didn't use the blinker but got hit in the back, they got a ticket for not using their blinker. And the guy that ends up hitting in the back ends up getting them charged with negligent homicide. Right. And so you just have to make sure you're careful. This could have happened, really, I think, to anybody. Just a split second, look down at the radio, look back up. I was whamming right there because they stopped all of a sudden. Okay? And you have these cases, too, where obviously there's some cases where, you know, you don't hook a trailer up. Right, you don't put the hooks in like you're required. Maybe you just put the hitch on where the trailer comes off and kills somebody. That was a Tello case. That was reckless. That was recklessness because that was such a grave danger that when the trailer comes off, it came off on the highway. It could kill so many people. Okay, but he knew there was no hooks on there. And so if you could prove maybe that your buddy was with you and he said he got it, but he thought you got it, and there was miscommunication, maybe that would just be an accident. But the point is, we got to make sure that we're on our P's and Q's, even in little things such as driving, because if that trailer comes off, they're going to use a Tello case to go after you.
Yep.
Okay, and so we've got to be...
There's a case for everything in there.
Oh, that's what one attorney said. I got this case when I was young. I said, I got this case that says this. He said, well, I got this case that says this. I can find a case that says anything. Okay, and so judges especially do have a hard time a lot of times because, there's cases going both ways, and a lot of times the cases hinge on one little bitty fact that makes the whole thing just turn the opposite direction. And so sometimes being a judge is hard. But also in 2012, the Montgomery case, I know we talk about texting. This wasn't a texting case. The lady was talking on her cell phone and saw that she's and puts her cell phone down, and at the time that she hangs up the cell phone, she sees that she missed the exit, and so she kind of goes over the part that says the lines that says you can no longer cross over. I feel bad. I should know the name of that. But says you can't no longer cross over to the exit ramp, which I've done a couple times in my life. You know, I've missed it. I didn't know where I was in Dallas. I'm like, oh, that's... And I kind of just slowly move over. But the problem is when she moved over, she was going too slow. A big semi hits her in the back. Turns that one, hits another car, they flip over the side, and somebody dies. And she ends up getting convicted and being reckless, or I think that may have been negligent homicide. But these things can happen, and so you got to be careful. And these are everyday things. I want to
there's so many things out there that want to eat you. Okay, if you're out in the woods or something, there's so many things that just want to consume you for lunch. There's so many things in the law book that can just screw you every day. I mean, we're sitting here right now probably doing something wrong.
That's what we said. There's how many would I say is this 3.5 million laws on the books or more? I mean, it's growing every day.
That's why I like Trump. You bring a law, you got to take two off.
I don't have a problem with that rule. And so, I guess the more laws there are, the more money I make. I don't know which one is better. But we talked about making a firearm accessible to a child. And so maybe we got all the time. I was trying to end with this. I think these are some good and I said that day, you know, we're sticking to that code section. So under that code section, technically, it didn't violate it. Remember, I think one example was mom leaves her purse out on the couch, okay, and has the revolver open in the open purse, but it's not loaded. Mm-hmm. But, the bullets are in the other pouch. Okay, technically, she doesn't fall under making firearm accessible to a child because it's not readily dischargeable. There's no bullets in the weapon. It's not readily dischargeable, according to the plain words of the statute. But I said that day, that does not mean that she could not possibly, that's a double negative there, she could still possibly be charged with some other kind of endangerment of a child, some other kind of criminal negligence, mm-hmm. because that was so dangerous. Okay, poses such a great risk to leave a firearm with bullets so near to a child that anybody, it would be obvious that danger, right, would be possible, and the danger would be grave, that nobody would fail to perceive that risk, or she knew it was there, okay, and disregarded it anyway. And in fact, these kinds of things happen. There were cases where a child did just that and the parent got convicted. There's other cases where they get off, okay. But I want to show you how dangerous these rules can be, okay? And I've had several, just my own experience with endangerment of the child cases, and I'll tell you. Sometimes they make you irk. It's like, why did the DA do this? The DA's doing this because the CPS worker's putting it on. They really want to go after the parents. This is stupid. This could happen to any parent. The child's not even hurt bad. You know, this could happen to anybody. Some of them really irk you, and then others, you're just like, man, you're dumb.
Yeah, you don't need to be a mother or father.
Exactly. And so these cases are extremely hard, I think, from the defense standpoint, just to scare you parents out there listening, are extremely difficult because it's got this negligence, right? And sometimes it doesn't have to be a negligent act. It can be a failure to act. So it can just be maybe you didn't perceive and you also didn't act. You should have acted. It's obvious in those cases where there's medical neglect, right? Where your kid's sick and needs to go to the hospital and you don't do anything. That's one of those obvious cases. But what about the cases like Williams in 2007? And in Williams in 2007, the mother had her kids at the grandma's house. And grandma's house has utilities, has water, has everything there. And so mom is wanting to go home. It's getting late. So she goes home. And she goes to her house that doesn't have any utilities. In fact, they have no lighting and or very spotty lighting. The utilities don't work that well. So they routinely use candles, right, to save on electricity bill. And when the electricity gets cut off, they use candles to cut it on. And mom says, I'm going to go to the store. And grandmother actually says, no, don't do that. It's dangerous to have candles over there. You should stay over here. Right, just don't go over there. I have everything you need over here. Don't go. Well, she goes home anyway, and when she gets over there, she lights the candles just like she does every night. Well, she forgets something. She has to go to the store. Her boyfriend's there, who's a competent adult. No drugs involved. There's nothing like that going on. Competent adult. She says, I'll be back. I'm going to the store. So before she's able to come back, the candle fell off. The boyfriend fell asleep. Candle falls off the table. Ends up catching on some very flammable paint that was on the wall or something to that effect. House burns down and the two little girls die. She gets charged with, you know, homicide and endangerment of a child and reckless conduct. And this was reckless. That she did not perceive this obvious and just outstanding dangerous risk. And so many people say, there's nothing wrong with that. This is why we have to be outward looking, and this is why we talk about the Second Amendment rights. If you let one thing go, right, then you're gonna open Pandora's box for prosecution in all other, so many other scenarios. And in fact, the court says this: if taking children to spend the night in a structure without utilities is conduct that involves an extreme risk of danger for which one may be subject to criminal prosecution, should harm befall a child, the backwoods campers of the world are in serious jeopardy. Any adult who lights a campfire that emits a spark that lands on a child's pajamas and seriously burns a child is prosecuted as a felon. Scoutmasters, beware. If a Coleman gas lantern tips over and sets the child's pup tent ablaze, they might suffer the same fate. Parents who use a candle to read a bedtime story, they better be weary as well. Reading an hour in the candle tips over and burns the child, any of these harms might befall the camper's child or anybody else's child who happens to light a candle in the house or happens to have a child in a house without utilities.
But that's different than the scenario you gave.
It
is because that was an accident as compared to the candle mom left that's negligent.
Is it criminally, this is the point of the story, is it criminally negligent? What if you're camping? And you leave the campfire, and dad goes fishing, right, with Johnny, but leaves the two girls and mom back home, and they fall asleep around the campfire.
But you had made comment before about things that are acceptable in the sense of reasonableness that everybody knows. Leaving a campfire unattended, everybody should know who camps out that that's not a good thing to do.
The state tried to make the same argument, and it was brought out that actually more house fires happen in houses without candles burning. Only 10% of all house fires happen, right, with an open flame. And per capita, right? It was greater as well as most occurred from the utilities.
I can see why that would be, because not how often do people light their houses up with candles? It's usually with electric, and you have a faulty switch.
That's true.
Something.
And so, but the same applies. This has never happened before. There was no reason to think that the boyfriend was incompetent to watch them.
You see, now that's a good point. She leaves with the boyfriend's there,
who's competent,
but fell asleep. That was an accident. And it just happened to be an accident.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so if you leave a babysitter, this would open up anybody who has a babysitter for their children. The babysitter appears competent. They did a background check. Everything was good. Babysitter falls asleep. One of the kids goes and ends up falling off the roof of the house. The parents would be criminally negligent.
I'll tell you what, we're running out of time. Did you want to touch on this story real quick?
And that's what this is the story. I mean, you brought this up to me.
Look, ladies and gentlemen, I'm looking at an article in the paper, Temple Telegram here, just if you want to follow along. It's on it was on Friday, 7A in the Second Front. It's 7-month-old shooting brings charge. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so that's just making a firearm accessible to a child. And I wanted to expand that and say that's why this firearm accessible to a child does not control every situation that you need to be responsible with your firearm, because you could do what we talked about in this other scenario with the purse and not violate the accessibility to a firearm to a minor statute, but at the same time it could be found to be negligent or even reckless. And not in every case, right? It's so fact intensive. I mean, maybe you're child is trained with has never done it before. You always kept it there. There was a good reason to think that nothing would happen. Maybe he's had a nervous breakdown. There's reasons why you might not be found guilty, but don't put yourself in these situations. Just make sure that you're aware of what's going on, because it doesn't take much. And we see in some of these cases,
you made a comment to be charged. You made a comment about looking down the road. That's why I have conversations with people, and you sometimes are one of them, that I ask you questions. You're like, what are you asking me that for? It's because here's point A, and I'm looking down the road because I know things can happen, and I'm talking to you about D, and B hasn't even happened yet. It's because from history and experience, I know things can happen, and I go, well, what about this? Have we even thought about this? And I'm down the road already. And so people go, oh, you're boring. No, I'm not boring. I just know what can happen.
And it's a slippery slope, okay? And so that's what, again, I emphasize our prosecutors have a rough job many times. They do. A lot of times they're overworked. They get paid the same. I like to, a lot of times prosecutors threaten me with trial. I'm like, if we go to trial, I make more money. You don't make any more money for a lot more work. So you're not threatening me with anything, right? You may be threatening my client, but you're not threatening me with anything. And so, you know, I guess that goes into ego states. Why, you know, why come after me? I'm just the attorney, you know.
But adult to adult now, right?
But they do have a rough job. Sometimes they're overworked. They have a lot of cases. They get paid the same no matter how many cases they try. And sometimes they're required to try cases or the public gets mad at them. Sometimes it's a bad case and the public gets mad anyway. You got grand jurors, you got other judges, you got other politicians, you got officers, police, sheriff, everybody on your back. Okay, and so there's these pressures. That's why it takes a special person to be a prosecutor. And sometimes it takes courage to stand up to all these people and say, look, this really is a bad situation that it happened, but, you know, it's not a crime. And sometimes it's hard to do, and that's why we have our system.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have lots and lots of YouTube videos on my YouTube channel, Aaron's Gun Shop YouTube channel, of things of what Ross and I and Rick and I have talked about. If you have questions, it's probably been answered to some degree in those videos. You just need to go there and become a subscriber and check it out. But Ross, you always do a great job. Rick, fantastic job, the whole works. Why don't you tell everybody how they can get a hold of you?
105 East Main Street is my primary office location here in Cameron. You can
what are
call
you doing
me
in the back of the building, man?
Oh, man, I'm better at suing general contractors than being one, but, you know, no, I'm trying. It's been a long work. I was up. I don't think I've slept trying to do can lights. Who knew recess lights? I went to law school. You'd think I'd be able to do recess lighting, but anyway, it'll be done here shortly. Maybe we can have a function out there. I was going to ask you. But anyway.
We'll do a show out there if we can.
That'd be great. So come out and see us over here in Cameron. If you want to schedule an appointment in College Station or Houston or just want to shoot the bull, give me a call at 254-605-4140. That's 254-605-4140. Again, we love emails. We love questions about the show. We love talking about the legal issues if you have them and advancing those things. You give us topics for the next show. Just make sure you leave your phone number when you email me at benton@watson.legal. That's B-E-N-T-O-N at watson.legal.
Yeah, everybody, we're getting a lot of comments, emails, all that kind of stuff, questions. It's just better, you know, if you can call the show, you can get it recorded for posterity here so other people can take advantage of the questions that are being asked and hear the answers too. So, Ross, it's always a pleasure, man.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you, Rick.
Trey, let's take a real quick break. I'm going to come back, and we're going to do some dates coming up, and then we'll get delicious Janae Goodman on here with another tactical snacking segment.
Cavallino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Cavallino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Cavallino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MESO-FIRM.
Vicki Goza of Mark Burns Lewell Funeral Home in Cameron talks about being just a phone call away.
We are at a family's disposal 24/7. You don't get an answering machine. You may be talking with the family late at night or thought of something. You can pick up that phone and call and know that you're going to talk to one of us.
Call anytime, 254-697-3661.
You will feel like you are the only family that we're working with.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's July 21st, 2018. I wanted to go over some dates that are coming up and actually things that have happened. Last night was Ladies' Night. Had a great time. Every third Friday of the month is Ladies' Night. We had some ladies come on in, having a good time, showing us how it's done. So ladies, come on in and get to shoot for free. The range time is free. It's every third Friday of the month, Ladies' Night. So get a girls' night going and come on out to the range. Now, first Friday of the month is two for night. Bring a guest, they shoot for free. Second Friday of the month is the round robins. You've been hearing me talk about round robins. They're critically important to your ability to shoot better, faster, more accurately, under stress, and with uncommon firearms. It's a great way to learn how to shoot for self-defense. You need to do it. Check out Aaron's Gun Shop. Go to the YouTube channel. You'll see some videos on it. August 4th. Saturday, 2 p.m. is my next license to carry class. There are spots available. August 4th, Saturday, 2 p.m. That's $60 for the course if you haven't taken a license or gotten a license yet. If you have a license already and you just want a refresher, it's $40 because I don't have to do any paperwork on you. So give me a call. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Let me know. go to the website, aaronsgunshop.com, and you can see all the different pages there. Now, speaking of pages, I got this High Cap Adventure page, and we've got seminars. One of the big ones, the most common, is the Self-Defense Home Invasion Seminar. It's an all-day seminar. It covers many things. We do gun round robins, malfunctions, mindset, room clearing, all sorts of good things. And you need shooting on the move, multiple targets, a lot of things. So if you're looking to seriously be more proficient at what you do and how to handle your weapon and be more confident in self-defense, I can't recommend it enough. You go to Pahrump, Nevada and do a front sight seminar, it's going to cost you $3,000. Okay, I'm $165 and I give you a barbecue lunch. Same thing. So give me a call. We'll set it up. I need five people at least to do that, or for any seminar for that matter. So let me know. Give me an email, aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Go to the website, aaronsgunshop.com. Give me a call. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Follow me on Instagram and like us on Facebook. Now, Trey, do we have the delicious Janae Goodman prepped and ready to go? Okay, we're going to have, we got the Chief sitting in here in studio today. He's going to run just a few minutes late. We're going to get Janae on real quick, and then we'll have the Chief giving us words of wisdom. Trey, take it away.
Hello, my lovelies. I've got a special request to fill for today's topic, so I want to share the ins and outs of food preservation. Hopefully this isn't a dry segment. Not even a chuckle? Ouch! So whether you're looking back on waste and spoilage, or you need a new hobby, or you're gearing up for World War III, I've got you covered. I'm Janae Goodman, and this is Tactical Snacking. So I want to put this in perspective for you. The first refrigerator wasn't available for home use until about the 1900s. So how did our ancestors store their food? Well, it's easy to guess that they used snow during the colder seasons, but what about those areas with warmer weather or areas that didn't have snow at all? Well, unless they wanted to starve or eat spoiled foods, they had to find a way to do it, and they had to find a way to make it last quick. Preservation is the act of increasing a food's shelf life by limiting the growth of harmful bacteria and microorganisms. And some of the earliest versions of go back to about 12,000 BC. Some methods include drying or dehydration, canning, smoking, pickling, salting, and freezing. Many of us already know about freezing everyday items, and they can last for about a year. So I'll focus more on the other methods for the next couple of weeks. Today I want to talk solely about drying and dehydration. I feel like this is the easiest of the methods to work with, so we'll call this beginner territory. To dehydrate something is to remove the moisture from it. This can be achieved by hanging a product, exposing it to a low heat for a really long time, or by using a dehydrator. I understand that a dehydrator may not be the most financially available thing, and that's okay. Your oven will work just as well, you just have to keep an eye on your food. For one of the earliest examples of drying that I can think of is seed saving. Keep in mind that there wasn't an abundance of grocery stores or vehicles back then, so people had to live off of the land and they ate what they could find. Once they found produce items, these seeds were dried and saved for next year's planting season. Because of this, early civilizations didn't have to hunt for their fruits and vegetables every year. They simply used the seeds that they had from their previous harvest. This practice actually led to some of the first gardens. If you choose to practice seed saving at home, make sure that you rinse and dry your seeds and store them in a cool, dry place. If stored improperly, your seeds can become moldy. Once you have an established garden, you can save your seeds and you don't have to worry about buying new ones. Seeds aren't the only thing that you can dry either. Herbs can be hung and dried after being rinsed, and they can be pat dry and used with a napkin to make sure that they don't cause any mold. Once they're dried, you can keep them in small jars and ground them down when you're ready to use them. This drying process usually takes about a week. Dehydration can be achieved by salting an item as well. Salt naturally draws out the moisture, therefore making your items less susceptible to microorganisms and harmful bacteria. I imagine that salting was handy as far as adding flavors to foods that were being preserved as well. Typically, you'll see this method with fish and some meats, pork being a popular option here. I'm going to give you a helpful tip as well. If you're using a salted product, be sure that you rinse the salt off and dry it before you utilize it. That salt can transfer into your food. The top request I get is how to make jerky. I've actually never made my own jerky before, so I wanted to try out the process before I shared it with you guys. This week, I took the time to do just that. So I took a different couple of cuts of meat to see if there was a favorable one. They're all flavorful. I used a flake steak and a top round steak, and they were both marinated with the same spices, and I cut them in two ways. I did one against the grain and one with the grain. So here's what that means. Your meats have a natural fiber in them, and it looks kind of like strings. So when you cut with that pattern, it makes for a chewier product, and when you cut against that pattern, it makes it a little easier to digest. So if you're using against the grain, that'll be for something that you want just as a quick snack, and with the grain will be more for those head-jerking jerky eaters, the people who really like to pull back and eat their jerky. So I did mine both ways just to see if I liked one more than the other. But whenever you're cutting your meat, what I would suggest, instead of cutting straight down with your product, angle your knife and slice this way. That way you have a kind of a thicker product instead of just going straight down. For my meat, I used about 1/4 of a cup of soy sauce, 2 tablespoons of Worcestershire sauce, 1 tablespoon of honey, 1/2 tablespoon of red pepper flakes, and 1 teaspoon each of onion powder, garlic powder, and black pepper. First, you'll want to pound out the protein if you're not using a thinner cut of meat. And this is to ensure that you have not too thick of a product. Next, cut that meat into even strips. And as mentioned before, it can be done against or with the grain. And then put your sliced meat into a Ziploc bag along with your marinade. Let this sit in your fridge for about 2 to 3 hours or overnight. When you're ready to dehydrate your product, preheat your oven to about 175 degrees Fahrenheit and dry those strips with a paper towel. Lay them out on a wire rack and put that wire rack above a sheet tray that is covered with foil in order to catch your oil. Don't let the strips touch. You'll let that dry for about anywhere from 2 to 5 hours in your oven. I did mine for about 3 hours, and honestly, I feel like I could have even gone longer than that. So next time, I think I'll be keeping a closer eye on removing that fat. So this fat here, that globule that you see, can actually lead to the rancidity of your product. So I'll be sure to get more of that out next time. And of course, like I said, keeping it in the oven longer as well. The jerky tastes great. I got a comment from the guys here at the station, but I do feel like it's still rather moist. So Trey actually recommended that I get a desiccant, which is something that draws out moisture for your product as you're keeping it. So I hope that I've given you plenty of tips and tricks to store for your own use down the road. And be sure to join me next week, if you can, to talk about all the other preservation methods. As always, be sure to drop a line at tacticalsnacking@yahoo.com. And until next time, stay hungry, my friends.
Not everyone believes in the same way or has the same customs and cultures as everyone else.
Vicki Goza of Mark Burns Label Funeral Home in Cameron talks about individual needs.
We can make everything very personalized. It's not a package A, a package B, or a package C. It's totally about the family and what their needs are.
Mark Burns Label Funeral Home in Cameron, serving Central Texas families since 1908.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. It is now time for the master of manners, the communicator of common sense, and the epitome of encyclopedia, Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement.
Good morning, everyone. Hope you're having a great Saturday and enjoying this nice, cool fall weather we're having. Oh, wait a minute. That's 110 yesterday, wasn't it? Yeah, it's going to be a little bit warm today, I think. 111, 112, you know, it makes you makes you want to go to church on Sundays so you don't have to think about that other places, about that temperature or worse. Hey, today we're going to do a couple of things. First off, we're going to tell you a little bit about what we're going to do. I'm going to be talking about the second portion of what we discussed last week, about just some things that police officers would like the general public to know about them. You know, there's so many things on TV, there's so many shows, so many programs that really give police either a bad name or make them look like heroes when they basically can't do what TV shows they do. I watched an old episode of Blue Bloods, and you got to understand that's one of my favorite shows, especially the part about family and about the decency and about the roughness and sometimes the compassion that they have. But you know, some of the incidents they did, some of the responses they make, that's just not police work. So we're going to talk about today some of those things. But first, I want to pass on my condolences to the Green family. You know, when I came to Cameron almost 7 years ago now, Sheriff Green was one of the first persons I met. And though at times we didn't agree and we butted heads, I can honestly say he was a consummate law enforcement officer. He knew the job. He knew about law enforcement. Personal ideas aside, sometimes we got along, sometimes we didn't. But he always had the public in mind. And he knew how to be a police officer's police officer. So to the Green family and to those that work with him, I want to extend my greatest condolences and sympathy to you all. It's going to be a tough time the next few weeks, and look forward that hopefully in the future, the Milam County powers to be, they'll find someone that has the personality, someone that has the knowledge and the ability to work with other law enforcement agencies to fill those big shoes he left. All right. What are we going to do today? Well, one more thing. I almost forgot. Almost forgot. Do you realize that by this time next Saturday, only 6 short days away, that the very first NFL kickoff starts? They'll be doing the football spring training starting next Saturday.
I prepared a kneel, too.
Did you? Yes, I tell you what, somebody kneels, I think they ought. Well, I'm not going to go there. But, I can't fathom someone kneeling for our national anthem. You know, when Tim Tebow tried to kneel for prayer, they made him stop. They said he couldn't do it anymore. But they'll let, and I'll call them thugs and un-Americans,
well,
kneel.
We're all bass-ackwards, aren't
That's
we?
That's right, we sure are. All right, folks, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to talk about some things we want you to know if you're in law enforcement. Number one, that the public should be better informed. You know, that is one of my pet peeves. To tell you a little bit of a story here, I was criticized quite heavily by certain elected officials, and I won't go to their names or her name or anything like that. When I was the chief here in Cameron, one of the things that I always did is I tried to keep the public informed. I'd put out either emails or I would put out news bulletins, put out press releases. And I got criticized and said, why do we always have to tell the public about what's going on? It makes Cameron look bad. Well, folks, I'm telling you should never be embarrassed to be honest. You should never be embarrassed to be honest. Crime takes place, and the citizens have a right to know that crime takes place. There's so many incidents that have turned into rioting because not enough information is given out. We need in law enforcement to be better explaining at what happens and how it happens. So that's something that's important to remember. Also in law enforcement, the law enforcement officers need to be better connected with the community leaders. And what do you mean? What I mean by that? Real simple, folks. A lot of times we don't connect in law enforcement with the folks we need to connect with. There's so much politics involved. There's so many things that come into play. The one thing you don't want to do, you never want to do, is you never want to turn your head to either the important people, you never want to turn your head to the common people, and you definitely never want to turn your head to those that are in need of help. So we need to be better that way. Now, the next one a lot of people might not understand. Cultural differences do hinder us in law enforcement. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I there was many, many years ago in my earlier career, I had one of the most violent incidents that I ever got involved in, where I had to fight and I thought that somebody was fixing to get killed, happened with a person that had come from Vietnam. And he was a refugee that was here. He had gone out, he had done some things wrong, and we were in the process of trying to arrest him. Well, everybody knows that when you arrest someone, especially if it's a violent encounter, you put them down on their knees and have them cross their legs. You have them sit back a little bit on their haunches, and that way you can handcuff them without much problem. This gentleman, when we tried to get him to do that, fought us tooth and nail. I mean, we had a fight on our hands, kind of like a rattlesnake and I don't know what. But come to find out, the cultural differences in his country, if you did that, you know what was going to happen to him? He was going to be assassinated. Well, unfortunately, we have to teach our people that. Our officers need to learn that. Every culture has a difference. Every culture has a difference. I went into a house one time, to be honest with you, and it was a young lady that I was dating. And when I walked in, right in the middle of the table, there was this six-person hookah. And now, being a cop and me thinking, you know what, they're smoking dope in this house. Well, they weren't smoking dope. What it is, this culture, this particular location that these folks and her originated from, that was how they celebrated. They put tobacco in it. They probably could have put other things in it, but it happened to be this was tobacco. They put tobacco in it, and they sit around smoking and talking and having a family gathering. So you got to know. You got to learn about cultures. You got to learn about ideas and principles. Now, one of the things that you really need to understand about law enforcement, and this is so important, folks, is that even law enforcement, even individual officers, gets very angry when they hear or read about an officer who abuses his or her power. We don't like it. I felt like quitting the force when I watched a certain person one time do some things on a video that honestly was not right. You know, it broke my heart, to be honest with you, but it made me angry too. If you're an officer and you watch something that you know is not right, you know something that is going to be a problem for you or your department, you need to stop it. And that's what we try to teach officers. Unfortunately, a lot of them don't learn that. Now, another thing is, gender is a part of the problem, folks. And it's just a guy thing. Most police shootings, of course, are by male officers. When I was police chief, we made a decision there would always be one or two women that would try to be on each shift. That way, if we had a problem and if we had someone who needed to be searched and it was the opposite sex, we'd have someone available. That's not always the case. So you got to teach people. You got to teach officers. And we did that. One of the things that every police officer wants, and I know that y'all have probably, many of you, especially listening to this radio show, have heard of Serpico and the Agents of Serpico and what happened in New York City. You may have even watched the movie and read the book. But what we wish in law enforcement, every cop I know of, bar none, wishes more cops would speak up when they see misconduct by another officer. We have to police ourselves. Police officers have to police each other. And it's not just the outside world to do it for us. If we can't do it and we can't stand up for what's right and we can't be right, our credibility is nil and void. And that's something that I always, always stressed. Your credibility is everything, everything that you've got. The other thing is improving communications can save lives. You know, communications training is sorely lacking in policing, folks. Look at the Eric Garner case. Here's a case that starts out as a minor infraction. It was selling untaxed loose cigarettes in New York City. The officers were trying to talk to him, and it was not going very well. There was videos all over the place when this happened. In a case like that, if they had better communication skills, they might not have to use the kind of physical force that they did. Sometimes you have got to talk to people and do it the right way, not the wrong way. There is ways we could talk to someone. If you walk in, and I'm going to talk to the husbands here a minute. If you walk in and you tell your wife or demand that she put supper on the table, and you just have a demanding attitude, you may get supper. Of course, you might spit in it too. But the thing is, you've got to know how to talk to people. You've got to use common sense. You've got to have decency in criminal justice. Too many criminal justice officers have lost that fact. And believe it or not, most police officers want to get to know the people in their town, their citizens. If there's an officer out there that does not want to get to know who lives in his area, does not want to know who lives in his town, then he doesn't need to be a police officer in that town. I'm not saying you walk over to him, give him a kiss, put a hug around him, grab him on the butt and say, hi, how are you doing today? But what I am saying is that you need to know your people. You need to know what makes them tick. You also need to know when there's good times and when there's bad times. So it's something that's responsible for you to do as a police officer. And we want officers to know that. And I'm going to tell you, bar none, I'm going to tell you what it takes to be the best police officer there is. And if you want to note this, you can say that Randy Dixon said this on the 22nd day or the 21st day of July 2018. And I will promise you, this is the most important thing that a police officer could do. The best police officers are the best listeners there are. Nothing ever was accomplished by talking over people. As officers mature in the job, they learn that you become a better police officer when you listen to people. They're trained to neutralize a threat, to make arrests. But I have found that if I get off the gas a little bit, listen a bit more, I can resolve problems with a lot less conflict. You got to have open ears. You don't just open your ears and open them. You got to listen. You got to hear what's being said. And many times, the jobs of police officers are extremely emotionally draining. You know, there's not a day that goes by, and I'm telling you right now, folks, not a single day that goes by that I don't think about a couple of calls I made in my 44 years of policing. The horrific sight that I saw, the agony that I saw, and two individual instances that they're just ingrained. They'll never go away. It's my form of PTSD, if you will. They're affected by things like that. Police officers are affected by what they see on the job. You know, if I get a call or I got calls where children were hurt, it affected me. I got a call not too many years ago as the chief to look at some photographs, and there were two young children that had been whipped with an extension cord by the grandpa. There was marks from their neck all the way down to their ankles. You know, and I'm telling you, that affects officers. That makes officers want to do things that they shouldn't. One of the only times that I've ever done anything, and I'll admit it now since the statute of limitations is over, but there was a young 3-year-old child, and this happened 35, 36 years ago, on East French and Temple, that a neighbor had called that the child was crying, couldn't stop crying. They thought something was wrong, so I was a responding officer, and this was in a midnight shift. Went up to the house, and the house was horrible to start with. It was in the dead of summer. It was hot. The kid was bawling, crying, and opened the door up, and the dope-impaired caretaker male had burned the child's arms 30-something times with the cigarette. The only time in my career, folks, the only time in my career that I used a little more force than was necessary to effect the arrest. And the way I did it, to be honest with you, after I handcuffed him, back then we had police cars that had extruded metal as cages. And all the way to the police station, there's about 20 dogs that ran out in front of me. And the young man bounced off the front of that cage. Was I wrong for doing it? Absolutely. Absolutely wrong. But I'm telling you right now, that child did not deserve to be burned 30-something times on his arms. So, yeah, the job is emotionally training. Now, a couple of things, and we're almost done today. First off, no police officer wants to fire his gun in anger or in duty. We love to shoot. Most police officers absolutely adore shooting. We love firearms. We love feeling that power of the gun going off. But let me tell you what. I don't know of a single police officer that wants to shoot someone in the line of duty. 44 years, I've had to do that one time. And it was the most horrific thing that I had ever gone through. Ironically, he and his brother became very good friends of mine, and we worked together for many years in another town, and to this day, I still keep in contact with him. And last but not least today, most people don't hear about the good things police officers do. If you've seen, if you saw the news here recently, there were two officers from Freestone County that helped an elderly person put in an air conditioner because they couldn't lift it. Those things happen every single day. I had officers that would buy kids bicycles in both the towns I worked in because they had theirs stolen and their folks couldn't afford it. I've had officers that have taken food to people because the people, the individuals, didn't have enough food for, to go by. There are a lot of good things police officers do that we never, ever hear about. But unfortunately, we hear about the bad things that happen. So, folks, I'll ask you to do this. When you see something happening to a police officer, or you see a police officer doing something, remember, know all the facts before you do something, before you relate on Facebook or something that you might see. You know, videos are great. We can put our cell phone videos on, but they don't show us what happened up to that point. So, folks, use common sense. Use a little bit of compassion for your police officers. Thank them once in a while. And if you ever have any need to complain on them, do it, because that's the right thing to do. So last but not least, folks, have a great, great week. I will not be here next week. I just get my eyes cut on a little bit. But have a great week, everybody.
Vicki Goza of Mark Burns Label Funeral Home talks about the celebration of life.
Let's remember that loved one, their life, about the way they lived and what they embraced. Funerals are really about life. Our attitude is we need to remember this person by celebrating the life that they lived.
Call Mark Burns Label Funeral Home anytime. Serving Central Texas families since 1908. 254-697-3661.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Capellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Everybody, the Aaron's High Cabin Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's July 21st, 2018. The number here to the studio is 254-697-6633. Give us a call if you got a comment, question. If the comments, they need to be positive. Otherwise, I'm transferring you over to Trey, and he can handle it.
Okay. They don't want that.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're in the Product Spotlight segment, sponsored by ANC Firearms out in Heidenhammer. Arch Kuntz is the owner, great guy, known for years. He's got a great place and a great staff. Mike, Clint, Dennis, they're all there ready to help you. They got pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, accessories, the whole works. And on his shelf, I was in there the other day. If you go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, you'll see me holding the Ruger Single Six, the older version one. And I've got one here, too. First thing I'm going to do, though, is check it, make sure she's not loaded and she is clear. It kind of looks like this, like I'm showing on the video, but the one he has there in the shop has got the wooden handle. And it comes with the extra cylinder, the 22 mag cylinder. So I'm going to talk about this in a second. But I wanted to read a little article from the American Rifleman. In the back page, they have, I got this old gun. And somebody sends in a picture and shows it. Well, this one is particularly the old model, single six, which is the one that I'm talking about that ANC Firearms has. So let me read this little thing, this little article, and we'll get to the gun. It's by Rick Hacker. And the other reason why I like this particular article, it kind of give you a little backstory to the Ruger Single Six. The adage that timing is everything was never truer than with the Ruger Single Six, a revolver that took inspiration from the Colt Single Action Army, a six-gun intrinsically linked with the American West, but which was discontinued by Colt in 1949 as being outdated. By contrast, the then newest gun from the fledging Sturm, Ruger & Company, flush with the success from the semi-automatic 22 pistol, was the 22 single-action 7/8 the size of the Colt's Model P, which made its appearance in June 1953. I kind of slaughtered that paragraph. Okay. A classic automobile aficionado. Is that how you say it, Trey?
Aficionado.
Okay. Bill Ruger christened his revolver after the 1920 Packard Single 6 Model 116 sedan. With a price tag of $57.50, the Single 6 appeared on the eve of the golden age of television westerns, with tall-in-the-saddle heroes blazing away on the newfangled TV sets that were starting to appear in homes across America. Thus, the success of the Single 6 was immediate, not only for those who wanted a single action as affordable to own as it was to shoot, but for anyone who wanted to emulate their cowboy idols. The Single 6 was initially offered with a 5.5-inch barrel. 4 5/8, 6.5-inch, and 7.5-inch, and 9.5-inch barrels came later. Using an unbreakable coil mainspring, it was the first Ruger gun to use investment castings. The black anodized one-piece cast Alcoa aluminum backstrap and trigger guard was another innovative feature. The Single 6 came with checkered, hard rubber stocks bearing the Ruger's styled Eagle logo. Walnut stocks were optional until 1961 when they became standard. Stag and ivory grip stocks were also available but rare. Most noticeable, however, is the flat loading gate implemented to reduce manufacturing costs, but consumer demands resulted in Colt-style fully contoured loading gate in 1957 around serial number 70,000. In 1973, Ruger discontinued what is now called the old Single 6 and introduced the new model, which featured a transfer bar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I think the one that Arch has is the older model, and the one I've got is the older model, and you can usually tell because it has the four clicks. Okay, when you have the safety transfer bar in there, it goes down to three clicks. So what you have here is a beautiful, beautiful revolver, perfect sized, well made. Exceptionally well made, lasts for years, generations if you take care of it. And the reason I got mine, I use mine for surgical shooting. I get rodents, possums, coons, whatever it is, snakes, and I've got to do some delicate shooting. This one is for one at a time, precision shooting, surgical shooting. It's got a beautiful feel to it. It's like they said, 7/8 the size of the real one. So you got that cool cowboy look, you got that heft in your hand, you got the nostalgia of the West, and it's just a cool looking handgun. So if you go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, you'll see me there holding it, playing with it a little bit, blah blah blah. Call ANC Firearms at 254-983-4417. Give them a call, say, hey, that Ruger Single 6 with the extra cylinder, I want it. Go in there and buy it. I'm telling you, you will not be dissatisfied. When I got mine, Somebody had brought in a couple of used ones at ANC. I walked in and I said, whoa, I want that one because it was the older version. And I've loved it ever since, and I'm so glad I got it, and you won't regret it. So go to ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. Give them a call at 254-983-4417. That's 254-983-4417. Tell them you heard about it on the radio. Support the people who support the show. It's the circle of life. They support me. You support them. I stay on the air. It's the circle of life, okay? So, and all the sponsors that we have, all the commercials that you hear on this on the show here are people who are sponsoring the program, keeping us up on the air, and I really appreciate if you would sponsor them, call them, tell them you hear it on the radio, let them know that they're investing well in the program. All right, so with that, Trey, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking, I don't have a guest tonight, but we're going to be talking this and that about ego states versus your alter ego. See you on the other side.
Yeah.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Fall Engine, formerly Cameron's Heat Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop at 408 West Bath. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and zero-turn big dog mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Fall Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bath.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron prides themselves on service, resourcefulness, knowledge of the law, and attention to detail. So if you or a loved one has been injured by someone else's negligence, they can help. Call 888-637-6347 for help today from Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm will work as hard for your family as you do. Call 800-460-0606 for Capolino Dodd Krebs.
Central Texas Martial Arts of Rocktail offers martial arts classes Tuesdays and Thursdays between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. in their 1,800 square foot facility, which is located in Rockdale at 973 Highway 77. Learn confidence and control with mind and body at the Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Call or text Master Cindy Key at 254-721-2775 or just stop by. Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, 254-721-2775. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's Hike Adventure Radio Program. Again, July 21st, 2018. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't have a guest tonight, but there's things that go through my mind, okay? And a lot of the times it's for preparedness, self-defense, what I can do to enhance in my teaching skills, all these different things. And when you look at it and reflect upon it, you know, sometimes I'll say, you know, how can I do a mag change better? How can I draw quicker? How can I conceal better? How can I be more alert? Blah, 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 blah. Well, there's another aspect to this. And something happened or something was said or I saw something that made me start thinking this. And that was the alter ego of people. There's like, I truly believe everybody has an alter ego. They may have multiple alter egos. But let's talk about what alter egos are as an example. First, I'm going to read something I got off of WikiLeaks. Not WikiLeaks.
Before you get started on that, Matt, I want to point out that that's one of my favorite things about this show. Most prepper and instructional type shows focus on the physical aspects of it. You know, how do you correctly change a mag? How do you prepare your stuff hits the fan bag? You know, how do you dehydrate food? But and you spend a good portion of the show focusing on that sort of thing, but you also contribute or address the mental aspects of it. You know, it's great to be physically ready, but it doesn't do you any good if you're not mentally ready.
That's right. You got it.
And that's for any situation, whether it's
If you had the picture of the pie and sliced up the pie, you'd have to you have to have a segment of pie there that goes to mindset.
You have to.
Yeah. And that's probably a large chunk of it, because anybody can buy a product.
You can have all the training in the world, but if you don't have the right mindset to apply that training, it's just so much clutter.
Okay. So with what you just said there, let's... I was going to read Alter Ego, but let me explain something a little bit more here. There's two aspects here. I want to talk about ego states versus the alter ego and how you can apply both to your personal self-defense. We teach in the class nonviolent dispute resolution. And out of our workbooks, we have section 5 here, conflict situations, that talk about parent, adult, child ego states. What I'm going to do is quickly read a few short paragraphs to explain what ego states are and then how we can apply them for self-defense, protection, or just making everybody all happy, okay? Observation of spontaneous social activity reveals that from time to time, people show noticeable changes in posture, viewpoint, voice, vocabulary, and other aspects of behavior. These behavioral changes are often accompanied by shifts in feeling. In a given individual, a certain set of behavior patterns corresponds to one state of mind, while another set is related to a different psychic attitude, often inconsistent with the first. These changes and differences give rise to the idea of ego states. In technical language, an ego state may be described as a system of feelings accompanied by a related set of behavior patterns. The position is then that at any given moment, and this is a very important paragraph, and in this paragraph is an extremely important sentence. The position is then that at any given moment, each individual in a social situation will exhibit a parental, adult, or child ego state. And here's the important part of the sentence. And that individuals can shift with varying degrees of readiness from one ego state to another. These observations give rise to certain diagnostic statements. This is your parent means that you're in the same state of mind as one of your parents used to be, and you're responding as he or she would with the same posture, gestures, vocabulary, feelings, etc. This is your adult means that you've just made an objective appraisal of the situation and are using the thought processes or problems you perceive or the conclusions you have come to in a non-prejudicial manner. This is your child means that your reaction is the same as it would have been if you were a little boy and girl. So we were talking about that with Ross in the earlier segment. I didn't want to bring it up because I didn't want to steal the thunder. But if Trey, if I shout at you and say, sit the heck down, I'd be acting parental, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
And then you'd probably go, who are you talking to, man? And be acting childish in the sense, not that you're childish, but that's the counter reaction to a parental command.
Or maybe I would yell back, no, you sit down.
Which would be a childish thing based on the definitions that we gave.
I'm sorry.
The whole point is, if we're not speaking adult to adult, we're going to have conflict. So in that paragraph where it says you can shift from one degree of readiness to another, let's say, for example, you and I are in a conversation and we're having an adult-to-adult conversation, but I decide to get a little crazy with a comment. I say something that offends you, and all of a sudden we get parent-child relationship going on. But because I'm familiar with it, and I see, oh my gosh, there was a shift change in the conversation, I can go, whoa, Trey, sorry, I think I said something that may have offended you. You recognize my sincerity, and then we're back adult-to-adult. But you'll notice, ladies and gentlemen, you'll notice this now. All we did right now is put names on it. But you do this every day. You talk to people every day, and you have situations where you're talking to somebody adult to adult. It shifts to a parent-child, child-parent relationship, and you have conflict, okay? So if we can understand how those work in people, because they do exist, if you understand that they do exist, and it does happen, you can potentially reduce the chance of conflict by understanding how it works. Now, I'm not talking about if you're about to get robbed, raped, murdered, whatever, you go, what ego state's he in? No, I'm talking, this is a precursor. You can stop it from getting to escalation point. Now, let me read Alter Ego. I got this off of Wikipedia. One short paragraph I'm going to read. An alter ego... That's Latin for the other I, and we're not talking eyeball, but the other person within you, is a second self, which is believed to be distinct from a person's normal or true original personality. A person who has an alter ego is said to lead a double life. The term appeared in common usage in the early 19th century when dissociative identity disorder was first described by psychologists. Cicero, you all know Cicero, right? Coined the term as part of his philosophical construct in the first century Rome, but he described it as a second self, a trusted friend. And I can see that point. You know if you got an alter ego or not. Most cases you do.
Dude, perfect examples of just from popular culture, The Incredible Hulk and Bruce Banner.
Yeah, there you go. Let's talk about it. You got the Hulk, Bruce Banner. You got Superman, Clark Kent. You got Spidey and Peter Parker. Who else am I missing?
Big ones. I mean, all of those are, you know, secret identities, but I think addressing the altered ego where you have a separate, distinct self, you know, just Jekyll and Hyde, and of course, Jekyll and Hyde, Hulk and Banner is just Jekyll and Hyde made large.
Yeah, but I want to go on the angle on the brighter side. Let me explain. We're peace-going people, okay? And if something happens, if you notice Superman, he lets things happen to him. Clark Kent lets things happen to him. But when it comes time for the cape to come out, it's truth, justice, and the American way, all the way. Spidey, he gets beat up, pushed around, all this kind of stuff. Peter Parker getting taken advantage of, doesn't get paid, is offered meat as form of payment.
Okay. I mean, and yeah, you know, he's obvious. But it's obvious that he could crush people, but he doesn't.
But when he comes out, he's there, ready to go. Okay, what was the other one we talked about? Let's say Batman, Bruce Wayne.
Well, he's always Batman, Bruce Wayne. There's no difference between Batman and Bruce Wayne.
The point is, we live our daily lives. Okay, we want to just do our daily lives and have fun. But this is the whole reason I'm bringing it up. To be prepared for a situation that may happen, I truly believe you've got to have your alter ego on standby. I'm a very nice guy until you piss me off, okay? I have good capabilities to do many things, but the good side of me keeps it in check. But if the bad side of me needs to come out for self-defense or protection of others or property or whatever, the alter ego side of me comes out. It's a person who's trained. It's a person who's ready. It's a person who goes dark. And what I mean by going dark is fun and games are over. It's time to respond, okay? And you prepare yourself. It's almost like you're in training with two different people. You train to deal with people on this side of the table, friendly and all that. But you also train to get yourself ready if there's a shift in the power structure.
Okay? You're a nice guy until it's time to stop being a nice guy.
Right. And what's that bumper sticker say? It says, do not
mistake kindness for weakness.
That's right. So
yeah.
So what I'm getting at with this is it's out there. It's definite. There are ego states that you must recognize that you can see from others that you might be able to direct, guide, maybe even manipulate to get back into an adult conversation to avoid the conflict that a parent-child situation. Look, if you're looking at the video later on this week, adult to adult, no problem. If I go parental, you're going to go child. We got conflict. If you go child and I go parent, whatever, conflict. But we got to get back down to the adult to adult level. So if we understand that we all possess that and it can come out multiple times in the course of a conversation, we just, you know, dodge the bullet.
The fact is, you hesitate to use the word manipulate because it has such sinister undertones. And that's just because nobody wants to be manipulated. Nobody, because it's considered a bad thing. But the fact is, in conversation, in conflict, in just everyday life, you're always manipulating people. Whether it's for a good result, saying, you tell someone, I really appreciate what you've done because you want them to feel better, that they've done something and you're proud of them.
I mean, there's two ways to say that. You do it because you genuinely feel it. You genuinely feel it, and you also know that, hey, if they like you, they're going to probably be favorable towards you.
Well, none of that, but you want an end result from something. You know, I tell, man, that's a great show, Matt. Because it was a great show. But I also know that that's going to bolster you. You know what?
You
am enthusiastic about that.
When you're telling me that, it motivates me to come back next week.
Exactly. And, you know, it's a form of manipulation. If someone says, you know, Trey, that was outstanding drawing. You know, I can look at it. I know it's a good drawing. But hearing someone else, that gives me the warm fuzzies, you know. Mm-hmm. And that may be what they're going for. Like, hey, you know, I just want to reinforce you on that. But you don't just come out and say, hey, I want to make you feel better. I want to reinforce you. That's not effective.
What would happen to somebody who doesn't have that alter ego? What happens to somebody who's always the same all the time, and the wolf comes around and wants to take the sheep? What does the alter ego do? If it isn't there, it just submits?
Well, it depends on what their their primary ego is. If their primary ego is this...
Well, that's true, too, yes.
Hard-headed, hard-driving...
I'm not talking that, though. I'm talking a person who's just got their head in their phone. Head in the phone is another is a new term, a clean way of saying you got your head up your...
Rear end.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, if it's your average person who just goes along to get along, obviously they don't have the altered ego for the fight aspect, because that seems to be more what you're addressing the alter ego for, switching from everyday get along with people to the fight response and the fight or flight response, or fight, flight, or freeze, what they're doing now. Instead, you have the primary response might be to freeze up or to run away. So it seems more that the altered ego you're talking about is that fight aspect of that danger response.
Now you do have the alter ego, like you had mentioned. I'm not going to say Hulk. Hulk is because he genuinely got aggressed upon and he turns green. But we're talking Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Dr. Jekyll, good guy, does his work, and all of a sudden turns into Mr. Hyde, and he starts killing people. Right? There's a lot of people out there like that too. I don't know if they're dramatically killing, but their alter ego is just in a bad way. I'm talking on a positive alter ego, your companion. The companion who's silently with you wherever you go, ready to come out upon your beck and call.
It's, I don't know how to say this. The way you're describing it sounds almost like, you remember the old cartoons? You had the devil sitting on one shoulder and the angel sitting on the other.
Well, I know what you're going, where you're going with that, but it's more of a tempting type of thing.
But, they're giving you advice and how to react to something. Well, in this case, it sounds like you don't have, you know, a devil on one shoulder or an angel on another. You have one guy sitting on your shoulder saying, you know what, everything's fine, everything's, oh, there's something's going wrong here. This is what we do. Let me take over. I got it.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know,
okay.
Cool.
I'll take that. Yeah, I'll take that. It's one brain, two egos. One's passive. The other one, don't jack with me.
The only problem with that is it seems almost like that I have with it personally, not as a actual, is that it's almost like a slippery slope for avoiding blame, avoiding responsibility. You know, after everything's said and done and the gun smoke clears and you're standing over, you know, victorious, and then you're like, oh, I did not mean to beat the crap out of all eight people.
I don't know about that. I'm not going that angle. My angle is, no, I meant to do that.
Well, what
I'm
saying,
prepared to do that.
I'm saying is it could lead to that. Because eventually someone's like, man, I'm a peace-loving person. I did not mean to hurt all of these people. Well, yeah, you did, because even though you say it's an altered ego, it's still you.
It was a necessity.
Your
one side doesn't want to do it, but your other side says it's necessary time to do it, and I have the capability of doing that. That alter ego gives you the capability of doing it. The bad thing is, if you're that nice person and you're getting aggressed upon and you don't have that alter ego, you're a sitting duck.
Or you don't have the relationship with that altered ego. So that understanding of that portion of yourself. I'm an easygoing guy. People who know me know I'm pretty easy to get along with. I tell dumb jokes. People accept that about me, and it's part of my charm. I don't know. But there are instances where I am not a nice guy. You know, children threatened. Can't handle that. That's something. I'm aware of that aspect of my personality. I own that. I think for someone to have that altered ego, they have to own up to having that aspect of their personality, whatever it is that would trigger them.
Yeah, a rational person understands they have the both. Some people who are mentally deprived in the sense that there's a sickness, they may not know it, and it comes out like the Dr. Jekyll, right. Mr. Hyde type.
And I think in order to be fully, that was easy for me to say, wasn't it? In order to fully utilize that altered ego, you have to be cognizant of it, and you have to own it.
I have a very high threshold when it comes to bringing him out. I put up with a lot of crap. I'm taken advantage of a lot. I'll shut my mouth a lot, so on and so forth, because of my studying of human nature and the legalities of things and this and that. And I go, it's not worth it. Just move on. Be a better man. Swallow your pride. It's no big deal. So on and so
forth.
And also
because the fact that I'm just guessing here, you feel that if you bring him out, it's time for scorched earth.
That's right.
It's
exactly.
Time, you know,
because,
burn the fields, salt.
Because
it.
I know what I can do, I get further, I try to stay as far away from my alter ego as possible. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break in just a second. All I'm trying to say is, if you had that alter ego, make sure he or she is trained so that when it comes out, it knows what to do. If you don't have an alter ego, you got a choice. You can either succumb to what people want of you, or you can develop an alter ego that when necessary, it comes out and saves the day. Trey, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have a replay of Master Cindy Key. Something came up. She wasn't able to come in today. Hope all is well. And we'll see you on the other side.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417. 4417.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Fall Engine, formerly Cameron's Heat Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop at 408 West Bath. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Fall Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bath.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Central Texas Martial Arts of Rocktail offers martial arts classes Tuesdays and Thursdays between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. in their 1,800 square foot facility, which is located in Rockdale at 973 Highway 77. Learn confidence and control, mind and body, at the Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Call or text Master Cindy Key at 254-721-2775 or just stop by. Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, 254-721-2775.
And stuff that we can use for our self-defense, we have different kinds of punches. One is just a regular straight punch. You always want to hit with these two. You close your fist, wrap your thumb around your fingers, and the two knuckles, the first two knuckles on your hand next to the thumb are the ones you hit with. If you hit with these last two, which a lot of people will curve their punch and they'll do a hook punch and then they'll hit somebody in the jaw or in the chin, and that's a really hard bone. And then these bones right here in your hand can fracture. And I've seen it twice in my class with men punching wrong. Not women, by the way. This is men. Women are more careful with their hands, I think. But this is just a straight punch.
I'm glad about that.
Right. So straight punch. Same thing with an uppercut. You still want to use these two knuckles here. You come up. The uppercut can also be used on the ribs or the solar plexus or even the groin, depending on how low you want to go. A hammer fist punch, I think I've talked about this before, is the bottom of your hand, the soft part. And a general rule is something soft on something hard or something hard on something soft. So this is a pretty good technique to use on something hard like a jaw. I like hitting this area right here or the temple.
and especially this, because the only time I ever knocked my instructor down was when I did a hammer fist on him on the carotid artery, and he dropped like a rock. And I thought he was playing, but he wasn't playing. Yeah. He said, give me an ibuprofen and class is over.
So what is that doing? It's just like taking the oxygen?
It pushes the blood up into the head and gives you a really, really bad headache. Okay. I've been kicked there, and it gives you a really bad headache. So we have the uppercuts, the hammer fist, the straight punches. Then we have my favorite is the reverse punch, which comes off the back. So if I switch my stance, this is my back. My right leg is behind me. And then I can totally turn all my body weight in and really drive that punch. We also have a one knuckle punch. Oh, I did that because most people don't think it really works, especially if it's
it works. It works.
And that's just if you're really close, you can still get it, and you just angle your fist.
You're doing that Bruce Lee 1-inch punch, man. Oh. We don't need to do it again. They got it on video, okay?
Well, I'm just saying, women, people sometimes don't think the things that I can use work. But so we have that small punch. We also have three more punches. There's a four-knuckle punch, which I would use on the throat, or on the ribs, or the solar plexus, or maybe even in the groin, but mine would mostly be here, because, see, he doesn't have very much, so if I try to punch him here, my fist's really not going to work, and if I don't remember to turn my fist, and even that's, for me, I have a small hand, but that's still wide, but once I do this, it makes it more narrow, and these are still very hard on something very soft. Oh, yeah. So that's the four-knuckle punch.
And you know the immediate reaction is going to be, oh, sure. And once he does that, then...
Then I just do whatever else I want after that. But there's two one-knuckle punches, and one is you bend your forefinger, and you make it stand out a little bit more from the second finger, and then you put your thumb in there, and you support that forefinger. And this is for hitting pressure points. I can hit here. I can hit the temple.
Oh, yeah.
I can even go for the throat. So this is just a small little area, but it's for, like, getting a reaction so that you can maybe do something else. The other one is you use the middle finger, and then all these fingers come in here, and it's almost like the one knuckle punch.
Well, I can feel it right there.
It'll really dig in. It's a little bit stands out a little bit more than the four knuckle punch. But I mean, these are just different things that you can use. I do want to say that I don't care what kind of martial arts you do. There's no wrong self defense. You don't know any martial arts. Do something.
Something. That's right.
Do something.
Just can you tell how to get a hold of you?
10 seconds.
Okay. 254-721-2775. Come see me.
Keep your powder dry and God bless.
Comment first thing this morning before.